So which swing is going to come out? Like under stress, under inactivity, which swing comes out? So that's where the neurological side is so interesting to me, because it's like, what can we do to make the early extension go away, even in the biggest moments? And what can we do to get the left foot to break instead of the right foot in the biggest moments, like even when you're not thinking about it? So in the winter months, when we're working on your swing, I want you to be thinking so hard. But then I want you to understand, like, I want you to train it and think so hard in the winter that when you get to the summer, like, dude, you can just let it rip. And I don't want you to think when you play. Like, thinking and sports go terribly together. Like, think about, is there any sport where it's, like, awesome to be, like, hyper-analytical?
There is a podcast brewing that's about to take over podcasting for good. The only podcast that you are going to need to tune into day in, day out, is the Member Guest Podcast.
If I can hit it down the middle of the fairway, that's great. But again, with the driver right now, the driver sucks.
And now, the Member Guest Podcast!
John Daly, and you're listening to the Member Guest Podcast. Rip it, rip it.
There's just something about a nice morning coffee, or in your case, a pre-workout, and a little podcast.
There's nothing like it, especially pulling into such a beautiful house with all these cool cars.
In the winter too, it's nice, and my fiance would call it cozy.
And we have this big beautiful screen behind us,
brand new. Sim Solutions Golf. Sim, yes, Solutions thank Golf. You so much, Jim. And the boys over there are just unmatched. And you were elated to hear that it's the same company doing your guys at Spring Hill.
Actually, at the Crafty Golf Studio. So,
oh, it's a Crafty Golf Studio.
Yeah, so they're doing our screens there, and they've been awesome to work with, and I know their screens are the best. So
yeah, they do all of Benoit's stuff too, and I know they've done a bunch of clubs all around the state, and that's how I got hooked up with them through Tommy Brandebar, who's a member at Windsong. So shout out to Tommy as well. He was like, I can't watch any of your videos with that hole in your screen, so we need to fix it. These are the guys.
Yeah. I was noticing it too. No, it looks really good. Yeah, they're doing my build out in Plymouth, so it'll be cool to see the final product.
Let's talk about that for a second before we get into it. What's the concept? What are we doing?
Yeah, so I know, you know, there's a lot of cool places to go, you know, hang out and play simulator golf, but really what I've created, or it's going to open here in February, is a player development studio. So three TrackMan bays with cameras, you know, in three different locations in every bay. We've got Sportsbox 3D in every bay as well. So that's a 3D motion measurement kind of system. So if you're hitting shots, it'll tell you only turned your shoulders, you know, 77 degrees. Tour average is 91 degrees. Here's a drill, or here's what you need to think about. You know, try to get your turn to 70, from 77 to 90.
Is that degrees. Like the TPI thing where they like... I know you wouldn't have stuff on you, but where you're
Yeah, exactly. So it measures it, but this is markerless. You don't have to put anything on.
Yeah.
So it's AI created. And there's a ton of different things. So like as a coach, it's really good. But then also just as someone who wants to like, hey, I want to get better at golf. Well, the whole idea behind the studio is when you walk in, it's going to be impossible like not to get better. There's just too many avenues, too many feedback tools for you to use to not improve. So you know, Sportsbox is just one of them. We've got DeWiz. We've got Hack Motion. I've actually taken all of my drill videos from social media over the years. I've put them in a kiosk. And so if you're struggling with like early extension, you can go to the kiosk. You can search for early extension, and I'll show you a bunch of videos to help fix early extension. So I'm pretty excited about it. I think it's going to be, like I said, I know we've got places where you can go, you know, watch the game and play golf, but like, I'm looking to create an environment really where people just show up and it's impossible not to get better. So more of a player development facility, not really like a simulator space.
Yeah. This is about to be a horrible analogy, but like when we started the podcast, a lot of it was around like, there's so many podcasts out there about how to maybe like break 80 or like, you know, just kind of casual golf. We were like, what about the guys like us that are, you know, club golfers, maybe a little bit better golfers, like trying to lower the handicap and like, you know, you just kind of take the next step, right? There's always, you know, what can I do to reduce shots and scores? And then there's like the next level of, you know, mental game of like fitness and performance and just like, you know, there's always a next level to everything, right? Yeah, so absolutely. It sounds like that's kind of what you're doing.
Yeah, I'm trying to, you know, it's going to be a membership only facility. I'm going to limit the membership so that there's access, you know, 24/7. So, you know, you sign up, you book a bay, you get an email, and the email, like you swipe it at the door and it lets you in. So it's 24 hours
And where's it going to be?
It's going to be right in Plymouth off Highway 55, kind of right off 494 too. So if you know where Home Depot is or Schneiderman's, it's like right there.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I know right where you're talking about.
Yeah. It's in a good spot. You got to come over and check it out. Early February, we'll have an open house. So anyone listening is welcome.
Yeah. I'll come hang. When in early February, I'm going to the waste management.
I'll try to make sure it's not that weekend. It's we're waiting on Jim and the boys, and the contractors are still finishing a few things up. So honestly, as soon as they can get, in there, I'm going to try and do the open house as soon as possible. So, but even if you can't make that, just shoot me a text or DM me on Instagram and we'll set up a private tour.
Yeah. Well, we probably should have introduced you before. You've been on before, but
yeah, I've been on before.
We have gained, I don't know how many listeners, but we have gained a little bit. So there's going to be some new people consuming the content.
It was probably a year ago, right?
Yeah. It sounds about right.
Yeah. It was in the winter last year. So
yeah,
anyway,
sounds about right. So why don't you introduce yourself for the new folks in our audience? Yeah,
I probably should have led with that. So I'm Justin Kraft. I'm the director of instruction at Spring Hill Golf Club in Wayzata. I have been there. This will be my third year now. Proud owner and founder of the new Crafty Golf Studio opening up here shortly.
How cool does that sound to say?
It does sound pretty cool. I've never said it before like that. That was the first time, and it felt pretty good.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. It's cool when you start something too. Speaking from experience on the podcast, there's always way more work that goes into anything, especially if you're starting stuff from the ground up. So I can totally relate to that. And so it'll feel cool once it's open, you see it, and you're like, holy cow,
I did that.
Yeah, right. I did that. Exactly.
No, there's been so many little things too that I'm like, look, I'm a golf coach. People ask me sometimes about my Instagram, how did you do that? And I go, I don't know. I'm not really an influencer.
It's a byproduct of being a coach.
Yeah, exactly. And then they're, now I'm trying to put on another hat and be a business, I guess you'd call it business owner, not really. But all the questions that I get asked and I didn't think of that. Or hey, have you called the fire department to give them a, a emergency key? I'm like, no, I didn't know I had to do that. There's 100 things that I'm like, oh, I never even thought I'd have to do that. So it's been challenging. You're right. But there's always something that you're oh, that just took more than I thought it was going to. But it'll be worth it. I think it'll be awesome.
Well, let's start kicking this off with, because I text you from time to time.
Oh, yeah.
And talking about winter off season golf performance stuff. I'd love to hear what you're working with your students on, maybe some higher level players. Obviously, you're starting a business around high performance golf individuals. So, what are the main things that you're talking with students about right now?
Yeah. So right now it's interesting, right? Cause in Minnesota, we've got this lull. So, my online students, it's a little different than my in-person students, but right now in the winter is just a great time. It's January, it's middle of January right now. It's so cold out. It's a great time to just look, really kind of dive into video and be like, okay, what from a mechanic standpoint, how could I get this to look better and perform better? Even if in the short term it feels crummy or you hit bad shots in the short term, how can you really develop a mechanics focused mindset? So a lot of my players right now, we are taking, call it two or three of their big ticket items, and we are doing a ton of video work. We are doing a ton of slow reps, foam golf ball reps, and we are just hammering out whatever their tendency is in season. We are going from A to C and coming back to B. So we're really trying to make the video look awesome. And then we'll put a golf ball down and we'll start a real golf ball down, and we'll start trying to use that swing to hit shots and shape the ball and hit it solid and perform closer to late February, March, April, when they're getting ready to gear up for spring. But right now is a great time to take your bad habits, find two or three of them, and grind like heck to get rid of them. So that's really the focus right now. Now, it's completely different in the summer. I would say, if I'm doing lessons today, later, I'm doing 60 to 70% of our time is probably focused on the mechanics of your swing. In the summer, that's probably 20. I'm giving people a small amount of mechanical help, but the rest of it is hey, let's change targets. Let's learn how to shape the ball right and left. Let's learn how to hit the toe and the heel so you have a problem-solving tool when you're on the course if you develop a bias. So right now is really fun as a golf coach because you can really dive into mechanics and you can see quick changes, especially with juniors. And the summer's fun too, right, because you get to help people correct their ball flight bias. But right now I would say just a ton of mechanical focus and a ton of video. I know that scares some people, but it's really helpful, especially for the juniors.
It scares people, and it scared me at first, and then I think just the more that you do it and the more that you video your swing, the more you realize how important it is.
Totally.
And almost the disconnect between what feel versus reality, totally. Right? Like I never knew how over the top and kind of steep my swing was until I videoed it, and then I looked and like, now I can't get away from it. Now I can't, I can't like go a session without like trying to fix something.
Yeah, totally. And that's, I know this isn't a plug, but like, that's really why I wanted to create the studio with cameras, like in three different locations, because as soon as you hit a ball in there, you're going to see video if you want it. You can obviously turn it off, but like, just the feel versus real topic is just so prevalent. Like, it is just so real. And so for someone to come in and be able to see their swing, and like, you know, maybe you have some swings on your phone. Well, if you went to like the studio, or you just had video every day, and you look back like day by day, it might not start to look that different, but you look like month after month after month, you're like, wow, I've made some good changes. So that's the fun part about it.
Yeah. That was me when I go back a year, even 2 years ago, I puke looking at the video, right? Like, it's,
you're still a good player.
Yeah. Well, it is, and it's gotten better, but like, I still want to obviously get it much, much better. But even just looking back, you know, 2 years and thinking, how did I even golf with that swing? But it's, the second kind of part of it, aside from like the video, I've got all the foam balls over there. Yeah. You see all those?
I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Benoit turned me on to him. Yes. I know you're a big foam ball guy too.
I am.
For making changes. And I know you've seen some of my like 2 hour Tuesday bits.
Is any of that foam ball when you're doing that?
I'll sometimes warm up with them, or I should start videoing my, call it like the, I'll usually do 15 to 20 minutes of practice before, where I'm working on something specific, like mechanical.
Sure.
This is like the kind of, I don't want to say business, but like, people don't like to watch that, and they want to watch you hit shots.
They want to see you hit it close to the hole.
Yeah, like, but that, maybe I should start changing that, just because I don't want to like divert from who I am, like the true process with it. But my question was going to go to, aside from like the videoing stuff, what else can players be doing? And I was going to mention the foam balls, like for swing and mechanic work, because I think you're a big proponent of like the like rewiring your brain type stuff, right? Like in
it's hard.
Slow feels. Yep. And Andy's talked a lot before about his buddy who's a pitcher who like would go through his wind up and it would take him 3 minutes, right? Like he's literally like moving millimeters.
That sounds brutal.
Yeah. And so like, you know, that same concept with a golf swing of like retraining your neurological pathways, yep, exactly, or whatever stuff, right?
That's exactly like, what it is.
What else is there?
So I would say that you hit the nail on the head, that the most difficult part, right? I always give this analogy. Let's say you early extend and you don't want to anymore. Well, first of all, you got to make sure the shaft is in a shallow enough position, the face isn't too open, all these things that may incentivize you to early extend. But let's say, for example, we were driving to this awesome house and it was the middle of the night and you're driving on Highway 7 and a deer jumped out in front of your car. What's your reaction? Your knee or your femur or whatever, this leg lifts. It moves a little bit internally, and then your foot extends and flexes into the brake, right? Like, you immediately slam
without
on the
even
brake.
Thinking.
You do not think about it. You've done it 100 times, and you know it's life or death. Like, I gotta make sure I slam on the brake. So now, imagine you've done that for 30 plus years, and I come to you and I say, just so you know, I want you to learn, if there is a deer that jumps in front of your car, hit the brake with your left foot instead. And like, if I'm telling you every 30 seconds, hey, there's going to be a deer in the next mile, have your left foot ready, you can do it, right? So that would be like you in this beautiful like studio hitting foam balls, like, hey, I want you to not early extend. Oh, okay, I can do that. But now, let's say you haven't thought about it for 6 months and you're dozing off at 2 a.m. because you're driving back from Windsong or whatever. You're driving back from a golf trip and we haven't talked about it in 6 months, and all of a sudden a deer jumps in front of you. What one's going to happen again?
Yeah, you're going to use your
right, foot again. So this is you in the club championship on hole 17, when you got to make a par like to win the club championship, right? So which swing is going to come out, like under stress, under inactivity, which swing comes out? So that's where the neurological side is so interesting to me, because it's like, what can we do to make the early extension go away, even in the biggest moments? And what can we do to, like, to get the left foot to break instead of the right foot in the biggest moments, like even when you're not thinking about it? So that's the analogy I like to give people. I don't know if it's the best analogy, but it's the only thing. The other one would be like, how many times have you put in the wrong passcode on your phone, like after you change it?
Yeah, your old one.
Or when you went from sophomore year to junior year, how many times you walked to your sophomore year like locker? Like, I did that all the time. So it takes a little bit of like, it just takes a lot of reps, and it takes a lot of, I read James Siekman, really good short game coach and just mental performance coach. He was like, in two cases, people tend to revert the most. So it's inactivity and stress. So like under high stress moments, and then when you just haven't done it in a while. So I don't know. I think that's the best way to, I don't know if that even answered your question. That was really just a deep dive on the neurological side.
Well, I think it's, every time I have convos like this or do podcasts, I'll usually something unlocks, which I love. Like I learned something new, and what just clicked for me was that I've always thought of, you know, like the term, like trusting your process.
Yeah.
You hear pros say it all the time. I always thought of that as just like, you know, trusting, I don't know, call it the stuff that you've been working on, whatever.
Yeah.
Right. But what just like hit home for me was that when you're under stress, you want to revert back to your old self.
Of course.
But you have to trust like whatever you've been working on for the last 3, 6, 12,
it's so
even maybe 24 months.
Right.
Right. 100%. Just like even if you're hitting it bad or like whatever thoughts come into your brain, it's like I have to just trust what I've been changing and knowing that it's going to be better than whatever this old part was.
Of course. And I'll always tell people, like, I don't know if you saw, there was a PGA Tour post the other day. It was like all these PGA Tour players are winners. And it was like this whiteboard and they had to be like, you know, favorite food, you know,
whatever.
And then it was like, what's your swing thought? And like 8 of the 9 said nothing. Yeah. Or like hit it
hard. One guy said, don't shank it.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
I think those are the Korn Ferry guys.
Yeah, exactly. I think the important thing to understand here is especially in Minnesota, I want you to think in the winter months when we're working on your swing, I want you to be thinking so hard. But then I want you to understand, like, I want you to train it and think so hard in the winter that when you get to the summer, like, dude, you can just let it rip. And I don't want you to think when you play. Like, thinking and sports go terribly together. Like, think about, is there any sport where it's, like, awesome to be, like, hyper-analytical? Like, think about, like, when Steph Curry in the Olympics, he hit, like, this, I don't know if you saw the clips, but, like, he had this flurry of threes where he was just going crazy.
Yeah, at the end of the gold medal game.
Yeah, exactly. He hit, a turnaround over 2 7-footers. And, like, I know that every day probably Steph Curry goes 3 feet from the rim and he does form shooting, right? Do you think he gave 2 craps what his form looked like there? No, it was just like ball, basket, win the game.
Flow state. That's what they call flow state.
Exactly.
Right? It's like how much more can you get into that flow state? Because everybody's done it. Like, man, how did I shoot that score today? Like, in hindsight, like, you weren't even thinking about your score. You were just golfing and having fun. And exactly. Then, like, you look at it at the end and you're like, holy cow. And then your bad days, you're just like in your mind the entire time.
Exactly.
Like, oh, I got to do this. I got to do this. My left hand needs to be, or wrist
right.
needs
you're
to be
trying
like
everything,
this.
Right? You're like, oh, I need to try to tee it up on the other side of the tee box. Maybe I'll tee it lower. Maybe I'll do this with my, there's 1,000 things. And it's just like, think about the days where, you know, you show up and you shoot those good scores. You see the target, you react to the target and you just rip it. And there's no fear. There's no what if. There's just, let's do it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the one thing that's been hard for me to, I don't even want to say adjust to, but like do as I've gotten better, because it's like I know it, like inherently I know it. I look back at my good rounds. I didn't even know. I've told the story about the yacht club this year a million times. Listeners are going to get tired of hearing it, but I shot a 29 on the front. I didn't know I shot a 29 until I made the eagle putt, and the guy in our group yelled, that's a effing 29, and I was a deer in the headlights. I was like,
how'd the back nine go?
I got the scorecard over here. I think I was
there, right?
I was even. So I piped my 10, hit it to call it 3 feet, and had like a Rory type putt. I was like above the hole, missed it, made par, almost dunked the next hole 11 to par 3, almost dunked it, tapped in. So I was now at whatever that was, like call it 9 under 10, whatever it was. And then I got to the hole 12, which is a par 4, and you hit like over a road. Do you know Yacht Club very well? Yeah. It's the one where you're literally on top of the highway.
Okay.
And I'd go to step up and going through my process, and I start to hear a car come. And I kind of like, I was like, shit, I need to go. And I rushed it, ended up making a bogey. And I think I made a bunch of pars until 18 where I tried to make a birdie. But like I hung in there. But the whole point is that I didn't know what my score was on the front nine until somebody said what my score was on the front nine. And it completely shifted my mindset to like, oh, maybe I can get a course record at a top 100. Right. Like that would be amazing. And then I fell apart. But
and
like
for you, like you had to even be thinking like, oh, how cool is this going to be to post on the member guest like page? Like,
yeah, I mean, there's a bunch of stuff going through my mind. And I, as much as I like tried to convince myself, I could kind of calm down, like just, you know, stay in the do all this stuff. I couldn't I couldn't. I just,
well,
I couldn't.
Been there
I didn't.
Before, right? So it'd probably be like the first time you shot under par, it'd be like, oh my God, I'm on 17 and I'm one under and I've never been here. Like most of the time people don't finish that out super well the first time.
Yeah.
But then you just start to get so comfortable. That's why I think it's just so crazy that we have so many Korn Ferry guys, PGA Tour guys that can just take it stupid low. Like it just tells you how many times they've been there in events we didn't see, right? Like high school, college events, you know, maybe amateur events growing up. They were in those positions all the time. And they're just so comfortable, you know, 10 under through 14. It's just ridiculous, but they are.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing about amateurs too. And I talked with a guy out of San Diego yesterday. He's like a plus four. And one of his like lofty goal is to, you know, win like the US Mid-Am and get invited to the Masters. Like that's what he wants to do. And, I was just telling him how I didn't play high school and college golf. And so there's a lot of those things that you learn, whether it's at a young age, just like through tournament golf, through all this stuff that like as most amateurs, you don't ever
experience.
Right. And then, you know, maybe like you're an am and you join like your first tournament ever, or join a club and playing your first club championship. And it's like a completely different game.
It's totally different.
It's completely different.
Yeah.
And it's like, how do you get over that?
Tournament golf is just insane, right? Like, imagine, you know, you play with your buddies and you think you're a decent golfer and, like, you can break 80. But, like, just like you said you stuffed it on, I think you said 11 or something. You had 3 feet down the hill, Rory putt, and you missed it. Like, people don't think about it, but, like, they're like, oh, he missed a 3-footer. But, like, in tournament golf, if that's a fast putt and it's downhill, I mean, don't 3-putt it, right? Like, you can't hit it by. Like, and those thoughts, when you're playing with your buddies, you play it normal. And if it's racing by the hole, what do? You, like, quick rake it. And you're like, oh, I can't believe I missed that, right? Like, you don't even think about the next one. That's where tournament golf is just so much different, right? And it's like, oh, I lost a ball. Oh, you can just drop one up here, dude. Like, you're fine. Well, tournament golf, it's like, no, you...
Yeah, you're going back to the tee. Yeah. You're hitting again.
And there's a group back there, like, looking at you like, you know, we've been waiting for 7 minutes, right? Like,
yeah.
So it's just a whole different environment. It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean... Our credit to him, I don't know why I've said Jack's name now probably twice in the last three podcasts, but Jack Hill and I played with him in the club championship last year, and I think he made like a 8 or a 9 on hole 8 at Windsong. He hit it left like in the shit. He ended up finding it but had to take he tried to hit it out, didn't, so now he's hitting, you know, 3, but he had to take an unplayable because it was so bad. Hit like 5 into the shit again, came out for a 6 on his 7, 2-putt for a 9. And he's, like, won our club championship before.
I was
going to
say, that's a good player.
I think the other 17 holes, he was, like, 2 under, right? And, like, you just go and look at the final product, and you're like, holy cow, like, how did a guy of that caliber shoot a, you know, 77? And it's like, for 17 holes, he was 2 under.
Yeah, that's just...
For one hole, he made a 9 because... You know, normally, like you said, if you're playing with your buddies and you drive up there and you don't find it, you know, in his case, he did find it. But, like, you know, you're probably just taking a drop, hitting 3. Like, maybe you can make a bogey or a double bogey at worst.
Right, exactly.
Tournament golf, it's a 9, and it's just completely different.
Yeah, totally different. So if you're someone who hasn't played high school or college golf, like, and you're an amateur and you're kind of getting into this, I would try to find as many as you can that maybe don't feel as important to you to start before, like, your big club championship.
A good one was the Mid-Am for me.
Yeah, there you go. Perfect.
And I'm not, like, downplaying the Mid-Am. No, but you know what I mean? Like, it's a little bit more, like, relaxed than maybe, like, the State-Am, obviously, or...
Right.
Or any of those, like it was.
And anytime
easy
you have
to
sign the scorecard with a number by it, like, and it, look, we're in a world where it's gonna get posted online.
Your name's
on
the internet,
exactly. Like that just adds a little bit to it. So, I don't know. I don't know if there's great ways to like simulate it, but you just got to go experience it. You got to do it a lot.
Well, there's the. So I've been starting to do like on the simulator here, and you mentioned Benoit before, like all the different kind of games and stuff you can do on simulators now, like. Yep. It's obviously not the same, right? Like, it's not a club championship or a tournament by any means, but practicing at least with the intent or purpose of, like, putting up some kind of score.
Yep.
Or number that you can try to get better on as you do it more.
And if you get off to a good start there, usually you can start to feel the heat a little bit towards the end that maybe simulates a little bit of tournament golf, right? Yeah. So, like, you get off to a good start, you hit a couple good, and then you're like, okay, you know, if I finish well here, I can maybe post my best score. Like, that does start to, I think, just get the blood flowing a little bit and the nerves.
You're going to love this. So I play on GS Pro now, like we talked about. And one of the awesome things about GS Pro is that you can play other people online.
Oh, that's
and so one of my buddies, a lot of my friends have GS Pro, but like one buddy that I play with, shout out Dan. He we'll play like once or twice a week. Like we'll just hop on, play 18, takes us like an hour. Super easy, super cool. So that we played, cool. decided to play Whisper Rock last night, and we turn on 20-foot gimmies because in our mind, and really just like stats back this up, if you're hitting approach shots inside 20 feet, it's considered a good shot. And so like, I know it automatically turns into a birdie, but just like the logic is, you know, you hit it inside 20 feet, like solid shot. Like you're probably making par on a real course.
Yep.
And so we're playing with Brock.
It kind of sucks if you hit it to 1 foot, though. 1 foot and the other guy hits it to 18.
Yeah, yeah. But it's fine. Like, you know, right? Like, you still know what the good shot is.
That's true.
So anyways, I'm 400 on the front. And like, I don't know why I get on like hole 13 or 14. I'm like, man, I haven't made a bogey yet. Like, I know they're 20-foot gimmies. But like, you know, even in sim golf, like, make a bogey every now and again. I get to 17, make a birdie. And I say it out loud today, and I'm going, all right, just need a good shot on 18 here for a bogey-free round. I don't think I've done that, like, when we played. And right when I said it, in my mind, I go, why the fuck do you just say that?
Yeah,
like, exactly. Why would you even, like, why even bring that even up,
right?
Bring it up?
I know.
I snap hook my mini driver left in the sand. I hit it to the short side of the green, chip it up there, not inside the 20-foot circle, and I'm still on the fringe. Oh. And I wish I would have had a video. I had to chip it because I was in the like fringe or rough, and I made it.
No way.
I made it for a four. And Dan was like, dude, you're so lucky that you just chipped that in. But it's funny because even in like simulator golf, right? Like I'm just playing with my buddy for fun.
Your mindset just changes.
Your mindset changes, but then even saying that on 18, I knew. I was like, why? Like, And that those are the type of real life examples that I wish, and like you learn from them. But they sneak up even when you do stuff like this. Like it's fucking simulator golf.
If you would have played college golf, right? Like you would have been, you'd be so much more comfortable in that environment because you'd have done it, you know, 15 times a year.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm starting to get there a little bit, but I think that's where
you have eligibility left.
I didn't play any sports. Could I actually do that if I wanted to?
I don't know like the rules, but like your handicap's a what?
I guess J.R. Smith did it.
Yeah, I mean, why not?
Yeah, well, I'm only a plus one, and I feel like good college golf nowadays.
Yeah, you're probably
is like they're probably plus threes.
Yeah. I think,
and that's not even D1. Like
that's
D2
just like
and
local
and
around
D3.
Yeah, like, I don't think that's U of M. I think there's, you know. I guess St. Thomas is.
Yeah, I mean,
D1
the U of M guys, they're spitting out, you know, Davis and pros and stuff. Yeah. Like,
that's crazy. Yeah. So, yeah, that might be a stretch, but you could go get some college golf on.
That'd be sick.
That would be cool, wouldn't it? You could make a new podcast.
Yeah, just a 34 year old redshirt freshman.
They'd love you because they'd get to come play Windsong.
Yeah, probably. They probably would enjoy that. Well, I want to talk about this topic, which is how do guys like me practice chipping and putting inside in the winter? Because it's neglected. It's an area that I notice whenever I go and playing, like, you know, like I just went down to Arizona, easily the worst part of my game. Like, no turf interaction. Really? Like, my speed on the greens, just, like, I don't have any feel. Any suggestions or tips for all of us winter golfers that, are working on our full swing, which is great, but obviously a massive part of the game is chipping
so
and putting.
Yeah, so like inside 30 yards, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So the one thing I would say is we've got a lot of science backing this up now in the golf industry is like really good chippers, they tend to produce very consistent launch and spin numbers inside like 30 yards. So if you're able to like measure anything, track band, quad, for like whatever, if you're able to kind of take the static loft of the club, so let's say you have, you know, a 60-degree club, if you're able to launch the ball around 30 degrees and you're able to produce reasonable spin, I would just pay attention to the consistency of that, and really the launch angle will tell you everything you need to know about your contact. So typically, like on track band, on quad, whatever, if you're hitting behind the ball, typically you're going to see launch angle go up because the club actually like interacts with the turf.
And it's rising up
the
face. The
ball bounces a little bit. The club gets lower than it normally would, and it hits the top of the face and launches too high with less spin. So that's the first thing you can do is you can like check out launch angle. Typically, if you're clipping them really nicely, like I said, about half the static loft. So if you're hitting a 56 degree, you want about 28 degree launch. Now that's subjective, but that would be reasonable. The other thing you can do, like if you have access to like TrackMan, right? And you're able to measure your angle of attack, which I think if you have the stickers or whatever, you can do on here too.
Yeah, yeah.
Look, there's been a lot of science. I don't know what side of the chipping debate you're on, if you've been well-versed in that, but there's a lot of instructors now coaching. 10 degrees down is kind of a solid number to be at if you want to make sure you chip really well. So making sure like you're measuring your angle of attack, making sure you're measuring like your vertical swing plane. I think there's been a lot of science to show about 10 degrees down is pretty good. And about somewhere in the like 80 plus degree vertical swing plane is a good place to be. So if you can kind of use this time, and it's difficult, right? Because this obviously isn't grass, but if you can use this time to make sure your mechanics and like your impact dynamics are really good, then I think it's easier to translate once you do get outside. I think people struggle learning to chip in here because A, they hit behind the ball too much and they don't really know. Like, because it felt the same, because there's nothing to like.
And there's more room for forgiveness too, right?
Of course, there's a ton of forgiveness here. Yeah. So that's where I think if you can really say, okay, I'm going to measure, you know, these three things, and launch angle, I would say, be a really big, important one. If you can meet those like kind of criteria, I think it will transfer better. Then I would argue like it's tough because like, this is kind of a nice spot. I would learn to just chip off everything. So like,
yeah, like the hard
hit off that one, hit off that one. Yeah.
I've even maybe the garage like, floor a little
bit.
Yeah,
the garage floor a little bit for super tight firm. I've seen like some really good instructors taking a quarter, you know, a nickel and a dime and like learn to clip that into the screen too. So like, you know, you don't want to like bounce into it, but like if you hit behind it, a lot of times it'll bounce over it. Or if you hit too far in front of it, you'll miss it completely. So learning to clip a dime into the net is also like some good practice. It's really good skill development. It's hard, but it's good.
Well, I'm glad you brought up the steep versus shallow debate when it comes to chipping, because I want to talk about it a little bit, because well, for two reasons. One, I think there's a lot of like misnomers when it comes to it. It's like it's either steep or shallow, and it's like I've realized it's obviously like how it's all individual, but
yeah,
it's never like black and white.
It never is.
And no, it's really funny. So when I was in Arizona last week, I went and did a lesson with Short Game Chef, Parker McLaughlin.
You did not? Awesome. Did. Yeah. Oh, how did we not talk about this before we started? Okay, cool.
Well, he's going to come on the pod, which is like amazing.
That's awesome.
Parker was like the coolest dude in the world.
Yes, he's
like
the best.
I call my buddy, he's like, how was he? Like, you know, I follow all his stuff. Like, how was he? I was like, dude, that guy is fucking sweet.
Yeah,
like that guy is
awesome.
So cool. Like I
love
just
that.
And we had
nobody
two,
ever says a bad thing about Parker. He has to.
I don't know how you
him,
could.
But he has to be the best dude.
Dude, I don't know how you could. He was like, will you give me like a testimonial? Like it really helps out. And I was like, dude, I would have done it if you didn't ask. Yeah, just for like how awesome this was.
Right.
We had 2 hours together, which was also great because I feel like in an hour,
it's hard.
Like if you're driving, you know, out to an area or whatever and back, like you're losing 10 minutes there, and then like we talked for probably just 15 minutes about like
you.
But yeah, like me, my game, kind of all the stuff, like got to know each other. And like, you know, if you only had an hour, I mean, there goes 30 minutes of it.
Yeah.
So it's great. We had a full 2 hour session. And aside from like all of my, you know, personal stuff that we talked about, you know, we talked about just like the concept of steep for shallow. He's like, and I told him I follow this stuff. He's like, okay, so I imagine you've seen like the steep for shallow wars and all this stuff. And I'm like, you know what? Kind of, but I don't really care and I don't really like understand it. And so he kind of broke it down a little bit for me, but I want to hear like your thoughts on it, because I started chipping the way like I loved all the stuff I did with Parker. I think that's how I'm going to chip,
for sure.
And people would consider his stuff quote unquote shallow.
Yeah.
And I come in here and I do it and my AOA is still 8 degrees.
Exactly.
Which I think people would say is steep. Like it's close to 10.
Yeah. I think we need to define steep, right? Because
yes,
I think people view steep as like massive divots. And that's not necessarily true. Like you can hit a ball with 8 degrees down and have beautiful little turf interaction, almost pick it even.
Yeah. And that's how I felt like I was doing it. And for all intents and purposes, I would say that was quote unquote the
shallow
way
method,
to do it.
Right?
But like, yeah.
So there's a big difference between like, where are you hitting the ball on the circle, right? If you're hitting it back here, well, the club's moving way down, but that doesn't mean the circle has to like dive into the ground. So,
and you're saying just to, before you keep going, for the visual for people.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a V versus a U, right?
I want them to think of a U, but instead of hitting where the U hits the bottom, you're hitting it a little more back here.
Okay.
Does that make sense? Because at that point in the circle, your club is moving down more. Just like if it was starting the U at the top, right? That part is moving straight down. That's 90 degree angle of attack. So it's not necessarily like a V. I would say it's a U, but you're just hitting the ball further back on the circle, because that's going to improve your ability to like reduce grass, ball, medium between the ball and face and get more repeatable results. But I think people view steep and they're like, oh, that means they're taking huge divots. Well, imagine we took this U and I just pulled it 2 inches up off the ground. Now you're not taking a divot at all, but that would still be steep if we hit the ball back there, right? So it's a little bit different. I like the word arc height. Okay. How high is the golf swing like from the ground? How far is the club head from the ground as it approaches the ball? And then like the descent of it. Those are two completely different things. So I want every listener to know it doesn't mean like Jordan just said, I'm 8 degrees down. That doesn't mean you're like taking big beaver pelts.
No, I was like picking it.
It's beautiful.
Like they were all like clean picks.
It's beautiful. Yeah. And I would say my philosophy on it is I have seen typically the more the angle of attack goes down or gets steeper, the more the low point is in front of the golf ball. So those people tend to chunk it less. Now, why are people bad at chipping? Usually it's because they hit behind the ball. So that's where
weight on their back foot kind of exactly behind
yeah,
it.
Yeah, and there's a bunch
trying
of reasons.
Trying to scoop it.
Exactly. There's a bunch of reasons for it. So learning to get the lowest point of the swing more forward typically helps most guys. However, like you said, it's not black and white. Like
yep.
I will go on record and say, like, look, Joe Mayo, Short Game Chef, they're way smarter than me. I listen to everything they have to say and I try to absorb it and I try to apply it in my own teaching. But I do think Derek Dominski is a guy down in it's Golf Better Tucson on Instagram. Okay. He's really done a good job, I think, of like categorizing this. So he goes, well, I have a ball first method and I have a ground first method. So basically it's like,
and ball first would be steep.
Steep. Ground yeah, first exactly. Would be ground first would be shallow. No, I don't think every time he says ground first, it's like intentionally try to hit 2 inches behind it. I think he's setting the stage for if he does hit behind it, it's okay. Because the bounce is involved and the club's going to keep gliding. Now, I think he's really good at teaching that. And then also teaching players like, okay, we're going to assess this lie. What do you think? Can we get away with ground first mechanics here or do we need ball first? So if it's wet Bermuda into the green, dude, I need ball first. Okay, what do we do to get ball first? Well, we play it back. We put weight forward. We get a little steeper with our angle of attack. Like we do all those things. Now, if it's just a nice fluffy lie and there's nothing crazy going on and maybe even it's a little down grain and it's sitting even down a little bit, you could be like, okay, I'm going to need some ground interaction here. I'm probably not like skilled enough to make sure this is ball first. And even like the mechanics of how the flight usually works, maybe you have to hit a little higher even, like using the bounce a little bit and getting a little bit of ground first or at least having that forgiveness if you do hit ground first is a nice way to think about it, I think. So I've actually started telling people like kind of copying Derek's methodology. They're like, hey, if you need ball first, here's what we do. If it's okay to like interact with the ground and you can feel it's going to bounce and move through it, here's what we could do. So have options, build both skills, and then get really good at deciding which one fits the scenario the best.
Sure. It makes sense. And I like the realization for me when we started work, I mean, the first call it half of our actual lesson was literally just, you know, around the greens, kind of moving around to those, you know, what you would call like stock yeah. chips where sure. you don't have to deal with like the hitting it high, hitting, you know, anything. It's just like, you know, you miss the green, you're on the fringe, you clearly can't putt. So you got to chip something
right.
and worked on that. But then the further that we got back, call it 20, 30, 40 yards, in my mind, I was thinking I would much rather hit pitch shots like this than I would steep. Because like, if you're, you know, like if you're in the fairway and you're, and you're pitching, in my mind, and you tell me if I'm wrong, this is just an internal thought that I had, which was the further back you get, like the easy way to think about it is you have more, call it room for forgiveness in your swing. Like if you hit 100-yard full shot, the speed at which your club is going through the ball, right? You just have, you can fat it a little bit and it'll go 95 instead of 100.
Right. And you have a 10-yard shot and you fat it a little bit and
it's going to go two yards instead of 10, right? Exactly. So that, like, speaking of that general concept, I thought that from like 30 to 40 yards, as my club is speeding up, it's better to be, call it more shallow, like you would want to be in a full swing as opposed to maybe steep where you're trying to get ball first. Is that a... Do you have any thoughts there?
That's a reasonable way to think about it.
I don't know if it's right.
I don't either. That's where I would say, you know, Ping and these other guys, Chris Como, Sasha McKenzie, they do all these great like studies about, you know, what is actually true. Because as players, we develop these feels and these ideas. And I like on the surface level, I would agree with like, that sounds pretty reasonable what you're saying. But I think it's so player dependent. I would struggle to say you're right or you're wrong without seeing data to support it. So yeah. I would wait to answer that question until we know more. I will say, however, from that 30 to 40 yard range, that's really when people start, in my opinion, to change the sequencing of what needs to happen. So what I mean by that is when players get on, like the TPI stuff you mentioned, they can measure the kinematic sequence or what's happening, like what's the sequence of what's happening on the downswing. And it typically dramatically changes around the 30 yard mark. So
really,
yeah.
Is that because you're not like you're in this middle area of a chip versus a full
exactly.
swing and now
yeah,
it's
so
like
that,
a,
that's where
awkward.
So like in a full swing, like you're trying to just smash a driver, you're going to load up, you're going to land on your lead side. Your lower body's going to fire first, then your core, then your arms, then the club. That's like the fastest way to do it. When you get inside 20 yards, what's the last thing we want? We don't want ball speed.
Yeah.
Some cases we don't want like excessive shaft lean, side bend, all these things that might be bad for chipping. Not to say shaft lean's bad for chipping, but the combination of that sequence can produce some poor things for chipping. So when you get inside 20 yards, it's like, it's crazy. I don't know the exact, I haven't looked at it in a long time, but I almost want to say the club head is the first thing to go, whereas in the other sequence, it's the last thing to go. So it's very interesting, and I think that's where you start to tap in a little bit more to what you're comfortable and what you're good at, which is the, you know, 75, 80, 100-yard swing. That sequence, you're really good at. So that's where I think you start to find some comfort, and then maybe, you know, whether it's true or not from like a physics level, but you find more comfort in that technique because it provides more forgiveness. It could be because you're more familiar with it.
Yeah, that's for sure true. And one of the things I learned and unlocked in that lesson with Parker, and when he comes on, he's going to have to explain this.
Yeah.
Because I'm not going to do it justice whatsoever, but I'm going to try my best. Which was, we had the conversation about like it was hilarious. So he's like, just hit some stock chips for me. I did. You know, he takes a video of me. And he goes, all right, I want to see you putt first. I go to putt. And this is before we even had like a conversation about my handicap or my skill level or anything.
Yeah.
And he comes back and he's like, your setup, dude, with like putting, I'd guess you're a +4. Your setup with chipping, you're like a 12.
Oh my.
Yeah. And I was like, okay, that makes sense. And so we started talking like, okay, like I'm a +1. Like I can play. I can like this. The chipping is my worst area of my game.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Oh okay. Yeah. But like by far my chipping and pitching, like decade stats, it's all like 3 and 2 X's. Like I don't hit it close enough. Like I get it on the green, but I don't hit it close enough. I duff way too many.
Interesting.
And so he kind of showed me and he's like, dude, look at like your putting stance. It's very, like very square. Like you clearly have a line, like intent that you're going to. You're chipping. Like I was very open. My shaft like was moving. And so like everything was just kind of off.
Okay.
And so we started with the baseline of like set up your chips like you do your putts. Like let's just get your setup really good. And so we did that. And then we just like chipped with 5 irons and 7 irons and all this stuff. And then ultimately we're getting to my point is like the light bulb came on when he said, I can tell you're a good driver of the ball. Like you probably hit the ball pretty far. Like you generate speed very good, but when you're chipping, you don't generate speed the same way.
Right.
And it was like a light bulb.
Oh,
and
I see.
Yeah. And he goes, so what I'm trying to do, like the whole concept of this is I want to move your ball speed and where you generate it from when you're full swing to when you're chipping and like change where it comes from. Exactly. And so by the time we were done, the way I was chipping, I couldn't, like I would hit a 15 yard chip and he's like, you can't rip through this hard enough. Like your upper body, like turn as hard as you can. And like, I couldn't get a ball to the hole. And he's like, this is the way that you chip because it's way more predictable.
Yes.
And now you're moving where your ball speed comes. It no longer comes from your hands,
right.
Your wrist, the club face.
It comes from
like your upper body and like your torso and how you're moving in the chip. And if nothing else, after that 2 hours, I was like, wow, like that makes sense to me. Like,
sure.
I don't need to create ball speed chipping with my hands and the club face and doing all this stuff. I need to do it by like my kind of body movement and like having a consistent setup. And he's like, that's how the pros chip.
That's
how most of the pros chip.
Right.
And that inherently made sense to me. So I can't wait for him to come on and like talk about that.
That's cool.
Where it like probably makes a lot more sense than how I just said it.
I'll be guest on that and ask some questions too.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, hey, we can have you come on.
Seriously, I'd love to.
I wish that he could come up here. I'm sure he does at some point, but he's all, you know, he coaches.
I know he's with
Keith Mitchell and Sam Burns and I think Paven as well.
He talks a lot about ball speed accumulation, accumulators. So like that's interesting you say that because that's always how I view Parker. Like I've heard him, I must have heard him say it at a seminar or something, ball speed accumulators, the things that help you produce more ball speed, which around the greens we don't want. So he talks about decreasing those.
Yeah, and he's like, well, in some instances you have to, right? Like in a short chip, like the only way to get, if you're short-sighted, the only way that you can get speed, like you have to create ball speed,
right.
But where's it going to come from? Like, do you really want to take a long swing, like a flop shot? And then we had the conversation about like Phil Mickelson and some of these guys, and you know, he was strictly talking strokes gained. He's not like talking against Phil or anybody right. by any means, right? He's talking like just you look at strokes gained on the PGA Tour. Everyone would say Phil Mickelson's a great short game player, right? And I'm like, well, yeah, I think so. And he's like, he's a great bunker player. He's really good. Like he can hit the flop shots over Steph Curry and like out of the bunker, he'll hit it to like a foot. But think about what you do out of the bunker. You're like a lot of wrist hinge, speed, bottom of the ball. Like that's a lot of skill.
Right.
You're not hitting that shot from 20 yards away out of the fringe.
Oh, no. Completely different.
It's a completely different shot. Right. And he's like, if you look at Phil's stats around the green, he's like 70th or 80th. Like nowhere near what he is out of the bunker because it's two different shots. It's totally. Two different. Like it's kind of the steep in there and the shallow around the green. Sure. Right. And so it was a very interesting combo and like a lot kind of got unlocked for me in terms of just like the, again, steep versus shallow and like chipping and pitching and all of it. And all goes back to say, like, for anyone listening, it's not one or the other. Like you said, it's a combo of both depending on the shots that you play. And he's very big about having like a stock chip that you can go to under pressure.
Like
but then things are going to change, you know, depending if you got to get in the air, out of the bunker, all this different stuff. So
yeah, I love the idea of ball first and ground first. I just think that's so powerful. You got a sketchy lie. You know, you need ball first, then you have a way to do that. If you have a what you think is a reasonable lie and you want, you know, quote unquote, that room for error, you can go with maybe the ground first method. It could even be trajectory based, right? You want to hit a lower one with maybe some more spin, go ball first. If you want like a higher floatier one, you go ground first. Like there's a lot of ways to do it.
Yeah. I'm excited to see what the next call it few months brings. To your point, I'm probably going to start chipping a lot more in here. Like I've tried to do some stuff, but it's really hard. Like I'll put these chairs over there and I'll try and like chip them into there.
Yeah, that's tough.
But like, it's hard to actually like have a hole that you're trying to hit to.
No.
And I got to ask you the question. So are you guys going to have any like chipping and putting areas at your spot, or is it just the Sims?
I'll have a putting area. It's a 24-foot strip, and it'll have a bunch of training aids on it. But I don't think there'll be any awesome. That's a good future addition. Once
they're hard
going.
To get. There's only one or two places in the state that have. There's that one out chipping. In like Blaine. Is it Blaine? Ross. You know Ross Miller.
Yes.
Ross is out there. Yes. He coaches there, and they've got like a big green and stuff. But you just need space.
You need a lot of space, and then I think there's even like some coding requirements to get. Cups
oh, really?
Into the concrete. Yeah, there's stuff like that. So, yeah, that's in the future. If I can get it going, I will. But we do have a putting mat for, like, we'll have a laser. We'll have some other, like, putting training aids there just for, like, stroke maintenance, sure. I guess would be a better way to say it.
Yeah, yeah.
And you can hit some longer putts. It's 25 feet long.
Yeah, you big on the mirror work and hitting stuff through tee. I mean, that's what I try and focus on indoors is, like, get really good at the three 6-foot putts.
Get good at what you can control too, which is your ball position, your alignment of your putter, and your like eyes and just your setup in general, right? So I think that those are things that over the course of a summer, right, people, you know, they show up to the first tee, I got 8 minutes to putt, 10 minutes to hit balls, and it's time to go. They don't have the time to, like, I don't know if you ever see like PGA Tour, Golf Channel, like before, those guys are putting mirrors down or tees down something. They're
it's
just
not the sexy
sure.
stuff to show on TV,
it's
but
not,
they do it for
but they
an
do
hour.
It, right? It's like human movement variability is just so real. One day, you know, you might feel super good and flexible, and let's say your trail arm rotates 75 degrees, and like when you get to the top of your swing, you're like, man, if I just pinch that elbow, it's really good. But then let's say you had to move a bunch of salt bags from your car to your basement, and the next day your shoulder only has 50 degrees of mobility. Well, that same swing thought, that same feel, it might not be working as well, right? So human movement variability, I'm not saying that relates to putting, but like one day you might feel like your eyes are over the ball and you're like, oh my God, I'm way past over the ball, right? Or I'm not close enough. So I just like the ability for a player to really get in the groove of, hey, let's check those mechanics every time you come practice. Doesn't have to be for 20 minutes. It can be for 4 minutes, but like, let's make sure those fundamentals are in a good spot. That's going to lead to more consistency over time.
Dude, I love when you come in. Like, I need to have you in here more because we go deep.
We do. This is not surface level golf stuff, is it?
Well, that's not what the pod is about. It's Andy made this comment on we just had our 100th episode, and he was like, dude, the great thing about this podcast is it's just like us learning, and then we'll put it out there, and if people care, like, cool.
Cool, yeah.
And if not, you know, whatever. Clearly, some people care, but I think it's fun to go to – to this level. It's awesome to talk about the stuff that we should be doing in the winter from someone like yourself that's like clearly a really good coach, and I take your advice pretty seriously. Like I love it. And I hope that when I have Parker on, maybe you sneak in.
I'd love to sneak in
live or something. Ask some questions.
I could moderate. Like that would be yeah. Either way, I'd do anything. I mean, maybe I would only be able to provide 10% or 1% even of like some maybe in depth questioning. But I would love to do it.
I told him, I'm like, dude, we'll go in the weeds. He's like, I love it. I was like, well, we'll go in the weeds, man. Like, deep. We're gonna get down. Yeah, I'm like dude, you're not gonna come on to a podcast where people are asking like, what's the stock chip? Like. It's not to go off on a tangent, but it's like, are you a crypto guy at all?
So I follow it,
okay,
and I own a little.
All right,
I own a little.
There's a like the number one company, number one buyer of Bitcoin. His name is Michael Saylor, MicroStrategy. They acquire like as much Bitcoin as possible. He's like, this thing's going to a million. Like, I don't care what I buy at. Like, that's his whole premise of his company and everything.
Okay.
Anyways, he's like he's the guy that like they always bring on the mainstream news channels to talk about Bitcoin. And the first question is like, can you tell us like what, Bitcoin is and why it's important? And you can see the look in his eyes. He goes, all right. And he gives like the 101, and like he really wants to talk about like,
he wants to talk about the analytics that are seven layers deep. He doesn't want to talk about, I get
that. And they're like, just for our audience that maybe he's never heard of it before. And he just goes, okay. It's hilarious. It's like there's this whole video of him just doing his sigh before and after all these questions. Great. It goes on for like 2 minutes and it's funny. But I appreciate you coming in. Crafty Golf opens, when did you say? The first week of February-ish?
Yeah, so Crafty Golf Studio in Plymouth. Website's live. If you're listening to this video and you're interested in it, or if you're listening to the pod and you're interested in it at all, send me a DM on Instagram, or you can just even visit the place at some point. But yeah, it's opening early February. Like I said, player development studio. It's there's no beer, chicken wings, pizza. Like it is for players that want to go in and go into an environment where it's impossible not to get better. That's literally that's the whole reason I wanted to create it. So we're going to limit the membership. We're already kind of 20-25% full. So if you're interested, act fast, love to have you. Especially if you're someone who's like serious about improving. I will be coaching there as well. Outside of my Spring Hill commitment days. So I'll be there a little bit, coaching players too.
And I don't know the answer to this, but just to add, like, is that, I don't know of any other places in Minnesota that are doing the, what's the technology?
Sports box?
Yeah. Is that what it's called?
Well, I don't even know if there's another place with like, look, there's going to be TrackMan, which is the gold standard of launch monitors. And then three video cameras, like three iPhones in each bay that are linked to TrackMan and Sportsbox that will give you video on every swing. And then, Sportsbox is the 3D motion measurement system.
Yeah, so I don't know if anyone that does the 3D motion stuff.
I don't know anyone in Minnesota that has it. I'm sure someone does, but I don't know that there's a public facility where you can go practice and use it.
Yeah.
And then there's going to be a ton of training aids laying around. Sticks, pool noodles, pro senders, Gankus training aid, like anything you can think of, rip sticks, butter blades, everything you can think of is going to be there. So I really want there to be no excuse for someone to show up and not get better. Like if you purchase a membership and like, I want to know, like send me your handicap before you started and then after you start, because I think it's going to be impossible not to get better.
Yeah. I'd love to do it. Maybe I could bring this come stuff here and do a pod. We could do a pod. We could do a pod in there.
That'd be cool. We could do a little walk around and then sit down and talk about it. That'd be sweet.
Maybe have one of your, whoever you're coaching come on too, but it'd be sweet to see the motion stuff and like the sports box stuff.
Yeah, I think you need to see it. I got some pictures I'll show you, but like for you, it would be super awesome because it would be like, you can measure pelvic thrust. So like how much is your pelvis moving towards the ball? And it would say, oh, dude, you moved your pelvis 4 inches towards the ball. It would cover it. It would color it red, and it would show you your video on one side, and then the red number on the other. And it would say, "Hit another one. Try to do this instead.
Don't do that.
And don't do that.
Use your left foot for the break."
And then it's 2.5 inches, and it's like, "Okay, that was better. That's yellow." Just so you know, tour pros are zero. And then it would, you could obviously keep hitting with that feedback. So I think as long as you know what you're looking for, and that's where I think a lot of members will probably take a lesson or two to get acquainted and be like, "Okay, this is what I need to be working on." And then I let them go practice and grind and get it all figured out on their own. It's just a great, like I said, it's a great feedback tool. And it's not to say you got to walk in there and every number has to be like green. You don't have to be tour average at everything, but you got to understand what you do well and what could be hindering you. And I think that that tool helps provide like quantitative data. Because as golfers, we love to say we felt like we did something. I'm in the business of like, let's measure it and make, I don't like guessing. Like, I'd rather take the entire guesswork out of it. Like, dude, if you get your hips in your chest 10 degrees more open, your low point's going to move an inch forward. Like, I want that statement to carry weight and be true. And if they do it, it happens. I don't want it to be like, oh yeah, I think this will work. Like, I want to
feel this.
I want to measure it. And I want it to be like, I want it to be a for sure thing. Cause if someone's paying me to help them, I want them to know for sure it's going to help.
Yeah. Well, I can imagine it's going to help a lot of people. I'm excited for you personally. So
yeah,
congratulations.
Yeah,
I'm excited to see the space, and maybe we'll just do a podcast there so I can see everything and so we can tell all of our loyal listeners.
Yeah. I want to get you on Sportsbox and get you some numbers. And then, if it works to come do a podcast there, let's do that. Maybe Parker comes in there and we hit shots and stuff.
Yeah. I'll see if he can come up here.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, that's true. Whenever he can.
Yeah, I know he's like traveling around because, again, he's coaching all these guys, but right. I know he's busy in February, he said. So then hopefully maybe like March, April. But
okay, cool. Well, yeah. Keep me in the loop because that'd be fun.
Shout out Parker.
Shout out Parker.
We're big Parker guys.
Yeah.
So,
of course.
Thanks for coming on, man. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Appreciate you having me.
Thanks, Rafty.